ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading today from Canto 5, Chapter 24, entitled The Subterranean Heavenly Planets, text number 21. Tadbhaktanam atmavatam sarvesham atmanyat atmada atmatayaiva. Tat, that, bhaktanam, of great devotees, atmavatam, of self-realized persons like Sanaka and Sanatana, sarvesham, of all, atmani, to the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is the soul, atmade, who gives himself without hesitation, atmataya, who is the Supreme Soul, paramatma, eva, indeed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, sells himself to his devotees such as Narada Muni. In other words, the Lord gives pure love to such devotees and gives himself to those who love him purely. Great self-realized mystic yogis, such as the four Kumaras, also derive great transcendental bliss from realizing the Supersoul within themselves. Purport. The Lord became Bali Maharaj's doorkeeper not because of his giving everything to the Lord, but because of his exalted position as a lover of the Lord. Om Agyana Timarandasya Akananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shri Mate Praladananda Swami Nitamane. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shri Mate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitamane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vitarine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Adeshitarine. So this is an extremely short verse with an even shorter purport. But yet, within such a compact unit, is volumes and volumes of information. So, this morning I'd like to begin focusing upon the last part of the translation, where it mentions how great self-realized mystic yogis, such as the four Kumaras, also derive great bliss from realizing the Supersoul within themselves. So in reference to that, more talking about yogis in general, yogis have a great deal of different powers. The topmost perfection of the mystic yoga system is to be able to elevate oneself up to a place called Siddhaloka. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained a little bit in the Adi Lila, 5th chapter, text number 39. In that text it says, beyond the region of ignorance, the material cosmic manifestation, lies the realm of Siddhaloka. The Siddhas reside there, absorbed in the bliss of Brahman. Demons killed by the Lord also attain that realm. And then in the purport, Prabhupada says, referring to the yogis, Prabhupada says, yogis who attain oneness through meditation according to the Patanjali yoga system also reach Siddhaloka. But But specifically in the translation, it's referring to how the yogis, they're meditating upon the Supersoul within themselves. The Supersoul is the third of the three Purushas. It's Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is but a portion of a plenary portion of Lord Nityananda Ram. That same fifth chapter of the Adi Lila, it expounds to quite some degree the glories of Lord Nityananda Ram, which is actually quite incredible. I just finished reading that chapter recently, and I was having a great deal of a realization by reading that. In that chapter, it talks about the glories of Lord Nityananda by expounding upon all of his expansions. How Lord Nityananda not only maintains, first of all, manifests, but also maintains the spiritual world and the whole of the material world also. Now, this is important to understand because it's described that we have to understand both nescience and knowledge. Knowledge referring to spiritual knowledge, real knowledge. Just like two tracks of a train. Both tracks have to be there in order for the train to progress. So in the same way, we have to understand not only the nature of this material world, but also the nature of the spiritual world. And so understanding the glories of Lord Nityananda is really a rather ecstatic subject to take up. Because in the fifth chapter there from that translation that I just mentioned, so this material world is also known as the region of ignorance. This material world, it's all manifest from the Pradhan. The Pradhan is also spiritual in nature. It's transcendental, it's eternal. However, it's covered by this cloud of ignorance. And then Mahavishnu, who's lying upon the causal ocean, he glances over this material nature. And his glance is reflecting off of this cloud of ignorance that's covering the material world. And that reflection is what activates the material energy that gets it all started. And so these yogis, you know, they're spending so much time trying to become one with this effulgence that's emanating from Lord Nityananda, from Lord Sankarshan. Trying to merge with this or trying to fix up within his mind this vision of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And they spend so much time, it takes so many thousands, tens of thousands of years to achieve perfection through these means. And for most of them, the best that they can hope for is attaining Siddha Loka. Siddha Loka, it's described also in the fifth chapter there, is the spirit. It's in the spiritual sky. It's not actually one of the Vaikuntha planets. It's the effulgence that's emanating from Goloka Dham. And you know what to speak of these mystic yogis who are aspiring for perfection in that way. What to speak of the materialists? Just recently I was seeing about, I saw this one article where it was talking about these scientists that are working for IBM. They're doing research into quantum mechanics because they're studying to how to perfect our computational abilities and our abilities of manipulating matter to alleviate all miseries of material existence. That's what they're ultimate goal is, even though maybe not most immediate goal. And so through their research, they were able to discover how to teleport a molecule from one place to another place. And they did this through, it's called entanglement, quantum entanglement, where when two molecules get entangled on the quantum level, then when they split, those molecules are still connected, even though they may be separated by a great distance. And so by manipulating these different molecules, they were able to transport one molecule across the entangled molecules to the other molecule. And it was like this big achievement. You know, they were wrote these big papers about it and this thing and that thing. And previously, back in the 1930s, Einstein with a couple other scientists had also discussed such possibilities. And even before Einstein discussed it, back in 1917, Tesla mentioned this very same thing when he received the Edison Medal. You know, so these material scientists, they're wasting so much time, so many hundreds of years, trying to perfect these different materialistic goals that don't actually bring them any satisfaction, that don't actually address the basic problems of existence. Because they're atheistic, they have no knowledge, they have no real knowledge. So they're lacking that other rail. They're getting understanding of nescience, but are not getting understanding of real spiritual knowledge. So therefore they can't progress in life. All it's doing is further thrusting us into the deeper and deeper, darker regions of material existence. And in the process, it's creating so many different disturbances. Like another of the things that Tesla was researching, which got canned as soon as the financial backer realized what it was going to provide. He wanted to provide free power for everyone. And so Morgan pulled the funding for that project as soon as he realized he couldn't commercialize it. So the idea was that you would use the energy built up between the ionosphere, and then anyone with the proper tower could just pull power straight from the atmosphere. But the problem with this is it uses the same frequencies that most animals, including humans, use for their thought processes and use for their navigational abilities. And so anywhere where Tesla set up his towers to experiment with this, to transmit power through the atmosphere, all the birds that were in that area would fall down on the ground. You know, and all this in the name of scientific advancement. All this in the name of trying to achieve perfection through our own endeavors. Yeah, sure, it's you know, very philanthropic to want to do something nice for the fellow humans, to help ease their suffering. But any time we try to aspire for easing this suffering and reaching perfection through materialistic means, it brings nothing but further entanglement. It brings further misery with untold consequences, untold fallout. Like they're trying to disperse all this oil in the Gulf of Mexico. And they're pouring, you know, literally tons and tons of chemicals, just dumping it into the waters. And they have no idea what chemicals they're even putting into the water. But as far as what they can see on the surface, it's getting rid of the oil. But they have no idea what the consequences of all these chemicals are going to do to the environment. Just like when they dropped the first atomic bomb, they had no idea what the consequences of that would be. And they didn't start manifesting until, you know, 50, 60 years later. But yet, so even one does achieve certain degrees of perfection, and one eventually realizes that this Vedic path, this Vedic tradition, gives ways of achieving perfection in a much better way than through gross materialistic science. And even if they do become great yogis who achieve mystic perfections and can elevate themselves to Siddhaloka, still, they don't get the perfection of life. They're still missing the perfection of life. It's described in the Brahma Samhita, in the fifth text of the fifth chapter. This text is describing Sri Goloka Dham and how it's being protected on all sides. I'll just read the translation and a couple bits from the purport. The surrounding external plane of Gokula is described in this verse. So outside of Gokula, the lotus flower, transcendental lotus flower, the abode of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, there's this external surrounding area. There is a mysterious quadrangular place, quadrangular means four-sided or four-angled, named Shvetadvip, surrounding the outskirts of Gokula. Shvetadvip is divided into four parts on all sides. The abode of Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are separately located in each of these four parts. So these four, these are the original Chatravyuha, where Dwarkadish is Vasudev, Sankarsan is Balaram, and then Pradyumna and Aniruddha are Krishna's two children, and they reside in Dwarka Dham. These four divided abodes are enveloped by the fourfold human requirements, such as piety, wealth, passion, and liberation, and also by the four Vedas, viz. Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, which deal with the mantra and which are the basis of achievements of the fourfold mundane requirements. 10 tridents are fixed in the 10 directions, including the zenith and nadir. The 8 directions are decorated with the 8 jewels of Mahapadma, Padma, Shankha, Makara, Kachapa, Mukunda, Kunda, and Nila. There are 10 protectors, Dikpalas, of the 10 directions in the form of mantra. The associates of the hues of blue, yellow, and red, and white are all extraordinary potencies bearing the names of Vimala, etc., shine on all sides. So this is describing the protections, the fortifications that Shvetadvip has to protect the supreme transcendental abode from any unauthorized individuals trying to approach. And so in the purport, it mentions that there are 10 tridents in the 10 directions to prevent and disappoint those who are aspirants for having an entrance into Goloka through meditations without the grace of Krishna. Self-conceited people who try to reach this region through the paths of yoga, meditation, and jnana, empiric knowledge, are baffled in their attempts, being pierced by the 10 tridents. Self-annihilation has its excellence in Brahmadham, which represents the outside covering of Goloka in the shape of tridents. Shula means trident. The mundane threefold attributes and the threefold divisions of time represent the trident. Ashtanga yogis, i.e. ascetics who practice the eightfold yoga, are the non-differentiative liberationists who, trying to approach in the direction of Goloka, fall headlong into the pits of disappointment by being pierced and cut asunder by these tridents placed in the 10 directions. Those who proceed towards the direction of Goloka through the channel of devotion, alloyed with majestic ideas, are fascinated with the charms of Vaikuntha, which is the outer covering plane of Sri Goloka, at the sight of the 8 perfections, viz. Anima, etc., and the majesties like Mahapadma. And so in this way, in the rest of the purport, it describes how one has to approach the proper way of approaching Sri Goloka Dham, and how when we don't approach through these authorized channels, then we simply meet with the pits of disappointment. So that's why Krishna says here in the text that we're speaking on today, text 21 from the 24th chapter of the 5th canto, Krishna says that, in other words, the Lord gives pure love to such devotees and gives Himself to those who love Him purely. So this is the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal isn't to reach materialistic perfection. The ultimate goal isn't to reach, you know, some sort of meditational feats, or to, by our own effort, force our way into the spiritual world, into the Parivyoma, Sevaloka. That's not the goal. The goal is to achieve pure love for Krishna within our heart. And for those of us who can actually achieve this feat of rekindling our love for Krishna, then Krishna gives Himself to us. So that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt." So it's impossible to dedicate all our activities and to fix our mind upon anyone unless there's some love there. That love has to be there. Otherwise, how can we focus, concentrate on anything? Currently, we're all enamored. We're all madly in love with this material world and our aspiring dominance over it. So in this way, we become so enraptured, so caught up with material objects. And material objects can go so far as to include even bodies, because bodies are nothing but another material object. A body is made up of material energy. It has no independent, separate life of its own. In the 6th chapter of the Adi Lila, describing the glories of Sri Advaitacharya, in one of the first long purports, there in the beginning of the chapter, Prabhupada is quoting Srila Baladeva Vijibhushan. And Srila Baladeva Vijibhushan is making this point also, that these different bodies, see, because Sri Advaitacharya, he's both the material and the efficient cause of the material manifestation. Because the material energy itself has no capability of manifesting anything. It's inert matter. It's passive. And so Srila Baladeva Vijibhushan, he gives the examples of just like a woman is incapable of producing a child unless the man is present. In the same way, material nature is incapable of producing anything unless the glance of Mahavishnu is present. And he also gives more mundane examples. He mentions a car has the tendency to turn left and to turn right. But on its own, it can't actually turn left and turn right. It needs a driver to turn the cart, to engage the cart in those left and right propensities. So in the same way, these bodies, whether they be human bodies, demigod bodies, demonic bodies, animal bodies, plant bodies, they're all just bodies. They're all products of material nature. They're material objects. And unless the spirit soul is within that object, it's simply dead matter. So with this in mind, it brings fresh understanding to when Prabhupada would refer to these bodies as simply dead bodies flapping about for a short period of time. You know, which gives good understanding. It really helps to focus on that. So we can focus on the real focus of our existence, how it should be focused on spiritual advancement. It shouldn't be focused on trying to exploit material objects, namely other people's bodies. So then in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes further to say that for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So this is another reason why it's very important to study the glories of Sri Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda Ram. Because it's by these two personalities that... Well, first of all, it's these two personalities that we have the most direct contact with. Because they're the ones responsible for this manifestation of the material world, which we're presently captured within. And both these two personalities are limbs of Lord Chaitanya. And so if we can understand these two personalities, even to a small degree, we'll have a much better understanding of Lord Chaitanya. And so if when we, like in this verse, when our love reaches a certain point, we'll be able to see Krishna everywhere. I think Rupa Goswami said in one place, I forget exactly where he wrote it, he was mentioning that if he had the choice between serving Krishna directly or serving Krishna in separation, he would prefer to serve Krishna in separation. Because by serving Krishna directly, he only have one Krishna. But by serving Krishna in separation, he would have Krishna coming at him from thousands of places all around him. So when we're serving in separation, everything we see, everything we touch, everything we experience, we see Krishna in that service, in that experience. And so that's why Krishna says here that he is never lost to one who sees Krishna everywhere and everything within Krishna. And of course, the perfection of that is the gopis. It's described in the 10th canto, the 32nd chapter, 22nd text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is after Krishna had disappeared from the gopis. And then they sang their song of lamentation, lamenting how Krishna disappeared from them. And so Krishna came back and he said, O gopis, I am not able to repay my debt for you for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. So this is the ultimate goal, the prayojana of devotional service, to where our love develops so strongly that Krishna has no way of even repaying it. The most that Krishna can do, as he said in this verse, from the fifth canto, is that he gives himself. For those devotees who purely love Krishna, then Krishna will fully give himself, he'll surrender himself to those devotees. He becomes an object of their affection, captivated by their love. So, I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Prem Sangharjan?
You mentioned, I think actually in Bhagavad Gita it's mentioned how we have to know nations and science, spiritual science. So to what kind of, how it explained to what kind of degree you have to know nations. You mentioned about, you know, knowledge about Tesla, about Einstein, about molecules. Did we know to know so many things about that? And what is the limit and what is understanding? What does it mean, nations?
No, you don't have to get that much into nations. That's just the degree to which these materialistic scientists are getting into nations. Because you can get into nations unlimitedly. The further you go, the further you understand that you know nothing about it. So really, it's a useless endeavor to try to fully understand nations. So what is required for understanding about nations is already given within the Shastras. Within Bhagavad Gita even, Krishna fully describes nations, how it works, the three modes of material nature, how Maya acts. In Prabhupada's purports, he fully describes everything we need to know about nations. It's just that we need to make that critical transition from jnana, from just understanding or remembering what we've read in the books, to vijnana, to actual understanding through practical application. Once we see what we've read within the Shastras manifest within the world around us, then we actually have that knowledge of nations that's required. We have to be able to see how these different modes of material nature are acting and how our sangha with these modes, our association with these modes, corrupts us. How we become intoxicated under the influence of these modes of nature and how it corrupts our consciousness when we associate with these modes. And so with this vijnan of nescience, then when we see our mind starting to become contaminated by these different modes, we can take appropriate action. And if we don't know how this material energy is working, how it's corrupting our consciousness, then our consciousness will just become totally polluted and we won't even know that it's being polluted. We'll just feel that, oh, well, you know, this is just me and these things are just happening. These are my desires. You know, this is how I feel. But no, it's not how you feel. It's not you. These aren't your desires. These are simply the three modes of material nature exerting their influence upon you, forcing you by your ignorance to engage in material activities. So that's why it's required that we understand nescience, that we understand how the material energy works. And we don't need to go any further beyond that. We don't need to, you know, become PhDs and this thing and that thing. That's unnecessary. That'll simply further cover us with illusion. Any other questions, comments? Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.